Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network on Saturday, November 24th, 2018. This is episode 1543. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by On Deck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, On Deck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, On Deck is a lender you can trust. Visit ondeck.com/techguy to learn more and receive a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. And by Helix. Helix is driven by a simple mission to empower every person to improve their life through DNA. Follow your DNA to a wealth of actionable insights into your ancestry, health, wellness, and more. Shop their Cyber Week sale at helix.com to receive up to 50% off all products until November 26th. And by JW Player, helping businesses, including TWiT, make money on their video. To make more while saving 50% on your Platinum subscription, visit jwplayer.com/TWiT and use the code TWiT at checkout. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography. We got smartphones. We got smart watches. We got augmented reality. We got turkeys. Lots of leftovers, I presume. And, of course, Black Friday. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, well, you can still reach me. You just have to do some shenanigans. You have to use Skype or a voice over internet doohickey. It should still be toll-free. 8888 Ask Leo. Did you get any? You know what? I'd love to hear if anybody found a good deal on anything. We'll help each other. If you found something for Black Friday you thought was an amazing deal, Scott Wilkinson will be joining us in a few minutes to talk about TVs. Of course, there's some really good deals there. You know what? There's not good deals on, and I was looking, is iPads. I wanted to get my mom an iPad for Christmas. She likes to draw, and I wanted to get her that. The new one with a new Apple Pencil, because she loves to draw. She saw me with mine, and she said, ooh, that would be so good for art. I said, yes, it would. So I looked around. Apple has very tight control on all this, don't they? I think the only place I found anything was a $50 discount on some models at B&H Photo. Apple doesn't do much. They'll give you a gift card, maybe, if you're nice. It's not like some of these other products. Man, you can get some amazing discounts. And, of course, the fight is on between Amazon and Google to take over your home. And so they're practically giving away the Amazon Echoes and the Dots and the things and the Google, the Homes and the Minis and the things. They're practically giving them away because they want you to wire up your house. You know, they might as well give them away because, honestly, they know they're going to make money on that stuff, right? It's just a matter of time. I mean, Amazon already does. I shop through my Amazon Echo all the time. I see, you know, things like, in fact, I did it for Thanksgiving. Amazon, give me some more flour. I wish they could do it like going to a neighbor and borrowing a cup and just bring it back. But no, it takes them 2 days. Things like that. And I figure that's part of the reason Amazon wants the Echo in there. The other reason, some people often think, oh, they're spying on us. I don't think they're spying on. They're not listening into your conversations. It's not even practicable. If you think about it, they've got to, how many millions of these are out there? They'd have some, what are they going to have, a computer listening to your conversations? I don't think so. I mean, that's the only way they could do it. You couldn't hire enough humans to listen. So I don't think that's what's going on. And I don't even think, I mean, people tell stories. My wife and I heard this one. My wife and I were talking about travel plans, and all of a sudden, luggage ads showed up on Amazon. Yeah, no, I don't think they were, like, they heard you talking about, I don't think they're doing that. I hope not. Then there's this Facebook portal. This is interesting. Anything with a camera in it might be a little bit different, because you could presume that they could use the recognition technology to use the camera and look around your house And see, I mean, I'm not saying they're doing this. I don't know if they specifically say they're not. You know, do they have a, you know, their privacy policy? They have a little thing that says, we promise not to look in your house, even though we've got a camera and a microphone. We promise not to. So the Facebook thing is called the portal. Facebook portal. And it's a video calling box. And I got the big one, which is, you know, huge. Is it a 17-inch screen? It might be a 15-inch screen, but it's like a laptop screen. And you can rotate it. So you can have it in landscape mode, you know, wide, or you can rotate it to tall mode. I keep it in landscape mode because it's a slideshow, just like the Google Home Hub, you know, anything with a screen or the Amazon Echo Show. It can do, you know, pictures, slideshow. So it's like a digital picture frame. But it takes your pictures from Facebook. So I had to, by the way, some time ago, as you know, in August, I deactivated my Facebook account. I deleted it. Didn't delete it, no. Deactivated it. If I deleted it, then somebody could pose as me, so I didn't want to do that. So I turned it off for my mental health. But then in order to use this thing, I had to turn it back on. But I discovered an interesting thing I didn't know about. Even if you deactivate your Facebook account, you still have a Facebook Messenger account. See, they don't really want you to leave. In fact, have you ever tried deactivating your Facebook account? They put a picture, six of your friends up at random saying, oh, Theo is so sorry to see you go. You want to tell him why you're leaving? Oh, my. Talk about, that's worse than my mom. Talk about guilty. Do you want to tell the class why, Mr. Laporte, why you're leaving? And I said, no, I just want to get out of here. Then Facebook says, well, tell us why. And if you don't give them a reason, they won't let you leave. So I said, I don't trust you. No, you don't get, that's not one of the choices. Why is that not one of the choices? I said, I have privacy concerns. That was one of the choices. I wish they would let me write. I just think Mark Zuckerberg is the devil. I don't think they wouldn't take that seriously. Although I'm not sure he's not. Anyway, the Facebook portal lets you make Facebook Messenger calls. You can call somebody with the portal, but you can also call somebody with Messenger. And I did deactivate my Facebook account after setting it up, which means I get somebody else's pictures. That's kind of boring in the slideshow, but I can still use it to call other people on Facebook Messenger. And I hate to say it, but it's pretty good. Have you made video calls with Facebook Messenger? It's pretty good. It's pretty amazing. I have to say, wow, you know, that you can do, the picture quality is good, the sound's good, but you can do, the thing that's fun, you can put faces on and scary things, and they have some Halloween ones that are absolutely terrifying, just creepy as heck. The portal doesn't have the full set of them for some reason. I wish it did, because I called my daughter, she was using Facebook Messenger, she could turn herself into a hippie and all sorts of fun stuff. And I only had a few things like a kitty cat. There is a good one. There's actually a really good one in the Facebook portal. It's called Cat Hat. And it's what looks like a live cat sitting on your head. And it looks around and its tail moves. And it's pretty convincing. But she had a better one. She had one where she had cucumbers over her eyes and a face. Green face mask on and a towel on her hair. Be perfect if you didn't want to go out on a date. Oh, I can't. I washed my hair tonight. This is be great. Great excuse. I'm sure that's the point of it, actually. Well, anyway, the real thing, if you ask me, the real point of this from Facebook's point of view, maybe, I don't know. I shouldn't impute. I can't impute ill will on their part. However, I do note that it has a camera built in that is very high quality, so high quality that it can follow you around, not with moving, but it's 4K, so it's got so much resolution that they can zoom in and it still looks great and move around. So as you move around, it follows you. That's their selling point. And sometimes I think people said, oh, that's creepy, Facebook camera following you around. That's not the thing that's really valuable for Facebook's point of view, is that it's a super high res camera, wide angle lens in your house where they can look at what cookware you own, what books you buy, what kind of clothing you're wearing. I mean, if Amazon had this, oh, they do. Never mind. What do you think? Are they, do you think they're, Somebody said, oh, for Halloween, you should dress up as a romaine lettuce. Now, that's truly scary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call. Let's talk high tech. Kim Schaffer's waiting for you right after this. Now, I don't know. I don't know if Damien knows something I don't know. But he's playing the Kim Schaffer theme song. No, he's not.
I didn't want to say it, but...
I didn't want to say it either. Hello, Kim Schaffer.
Good morning. I've always told people to put this on as my ringtone.
Our new musical director is in the house. And he ain't holding nothing back. Hello, Kim Schaffer. Answering the phones for us today, our phone angel. Phone angel. That's your song. Phone angel. How's everything? How was your Thanksgiving? Did you have a good time?
I did. I had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Yeah. I went down to my pub. They open for a few hours.
Nice.
To all the regulars. And then I took the smart train up here.
Fun.
Met family.
Isn't the smart train? It's crazy because we live in the middle of nowhere. It's country. But for some reason, we have a light rail service between Kim's bar and the studio, basically.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm waiting for them to put the stop here so I don't have to drive up here on the weekends.
There's supposed
anymore.
To be a stop across the street.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be nice.
Near Lagunitas or something.
Yeah, somewhere.
But eventually.
Yeah.
I look forward to that.
Anyway, it's crazy because, it's because of me. That's right. They're doing it because, it's crazy. It's like, this is the light rail that should be in like most cities of the world, but instead it's going up from Marin to Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there. What really is important is all the calls that you have. And I'm worried because it is a holiday weekend.
Do not fret, my friend.
Really? People
are
there?
Okay.
Oh, good. Who should I start with?
Fiona in Woodland Hills. I guess you brought her into the 21st century. Now she's got
to
buy.
Now she wants to go back.
Well, she wants to go back, but she has to buy a desktop or a tablet or a laptop or something. So she's going to give you her parameters and see what is going to fit best.
Oh, I love to go. I love to go shopping.
Yes.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Fiona.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today? Happy Thanksgiving.
I'm great. You dragged me into the 21st century because I had a DSL computer that I couldn't get DSL for anymore.
Oh, dear.
So I've got a smartphone now at your suggestion, and now I'm tired of the itty-bitty keyboards.
They are itty-bitty, aren't they? I can never type perfectly on a smartphone keyboard.
No. You turn them sideways and it still doesn't help much.
Not much.
But in any event... I'm a document person. I don't game. I don't do music on the computer. You know, I'm not a big user.
Yeah.
But the service provider for the cell phone will allow me to add a tablet to the cell phone configuration there at about $20 a month, as opposed to a new line with a laptop or a desktop, you see.
That's a good way to go. And your internet connection from the cell company is pretty good, pretty fast?
Yes, it is.
Good. It is in most places.
It's on the billing, but, you know.
In many places, it's actually faster than the landline internet service, like your old DSL. So,
well, now, I was thinking of a tablet because it'll allow me to connect for $20 as opposed to a whole new line for a laptop.
Tablet's a good idea. And some tablets you can actually get real keyboards for. I've been using a...
Exactly.
iPad Pro with a keyboard, and it's pretty much a laptop. But I put an LTE chip in it, as you're talking about, and it's great because it means I'm connected everywhere I go.
What's an LTE chip?
LTE is the cell phone connection, the data connection. It's a silly acronym.
Well, I have to have the cell phone connection.
Yeah.
And they'll add the tablet for less money than they'll add a new line for a computer.
Do they tell you which tablets they're allowing? Or does it matter?
Anything unlocked. I'm coming to you because I want as large a tablet as I can get with a keyboard, attachable or attached.
There's two choices in general when it comes to tablets. You're going to either go with Android or you're going to go with iOS. I generally prefer iOS. The iPads are really great, and they offer keyboards, a keyboard stand that works quite well. iPads start at $329, and I've seen Black Friday deals for under $200 and that's a current model. It has a little bit older chip in it, but it's a very good iPad. The other, there is one third choice that's probably, well, I'm going to mention it and you can decide if it's worth the money because it's expensive. Google offers something called a Pixel Slate, which is a, it's not iOS or Android, it's Chrome OS, which is more like a desktop OS. It's very, actually, I think a really nice tablet, but first of all, it's not available yet. You can only pre-order it, and it should be available very, very soon. The real issue, though, is the price for that. The base model, the least expensive one you can get is $600.
Stop right there, because I'm on Social Security.
So hold on, brother. is $300 too much for you?
Yeah, well, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, tablets are expensive.
What about an Android? Is there a decent, really good Android with up-to-date innards?
That's the problem, is you can get a $50 Android tablet, but no, it's not going to be a good one. You're going to regret it immediately. It's, you know, what is the old saying? Penny wise, pound foolish.
Exactly.
Right.
Something around 200, 250.
Yeah. Yeah, you might be able to get, yeah, see, even the Samsungs, which are the best tablets, those unfortunately cost more than the iPads. So.
Really?
Yeah. You can get a
up-to-dateness.
Up-to-dateness, of course. The, I would see if you can splurge. Look at the Black Friday deals for the iPad, because you're going to.
What are the current numbers of iPad?
They don't do numbers anymore. Thank you, Apple, for confusing the heck out of everybody. But they don't sell. The good news about Apple, they don't. If you get a new one, they're not going to sell you an old device. I would call your Target, your Best Buy, and see, you know, what Black Friday specials they have. The base model, it's just called the iPad. 9.7 inches, starts at $329. It's exactly what you want. You're going to spend another maybe $25 extra for a Bluetooth keyboard. So keep that in mind, too. But those are pretty nice keyboards. My buddy Andy Anako likes a company called Anker, A-N-K-E-R. And they make a wireless rechargeable keyboard that's quite usable. And you use that with the iPad, or you can get Apple. Apple makes a for the iPad a little keyboard stand. Of course, it's Apple, so it's more expensive. Their smart keyboard or their keyboard stand, I think, is more like $100. So now we're budget busting again. So that's why I mentioned the Anker, which is $23 on Amazon, $24. So now we're talking $24. Now we're talking about $300, maybe $320, but it's worth it. It's worth it, honestly. If you can scrimp and save a little bit, Fiona, you'd be better off. And the nice thing about the iPad, what phone did you end up getting?
I have a Samsung 7, Galaxy 7.
Very nice. The iPad, of course, is more like an iPhone, but I think it's very easy to use. Honestly, I think when it comes to tablets, Apple completely owns this market, and everything else is a distant second, including Android, even the Google Pixel Slate. I would say if you can, get an iPad. Black Friday is a good time to do it. Those iPads are discounted, not from Apple, but from other retailers. So check around, look in the newspaper ads. Maybe even get them to throw in a keyboard. That'd be nice. Scott Wilkinson with Home Theater coming up right after this. Hey, our Tech Guide podcast this week brought to you by On Deck. As a small business owner, I really appreciate On Deck. It is not at all unusual in a business to have cash flow issues, right? Holidays are coming. You want to staff up. You want to get lots of inventory. But you got to pay for all that up front. You don't get the revenue till the end of the year. What do you do about the shortfall? You go out and get a loan. Now, I think a lot of small business people go out and use their credit card. Do not. You're just throwing your money away. When you go to On Deck. On Deck is 100% committed to small business owners with fast, easy, tailored financing at a much lower rate than a credit card. Your time is valuable. You can get funding as fast as 24 hours. They've got term loans up to $500,000, lines of credit up to $100,000, and they don't require business collateral. They will not impact your personal credit. The application process couldn't be easier. You can apply online or by phone, and they literally approve you in minutes and get your money within as fast as 24 hours. On Deck. And if you have any questions at all, you should know that they are U.S.-based. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Trustpilot gives them a 9.8 out of 10 rating. That's as high as I've ever seen. And they've lent over $10 billion to 80,000 small business owners. This is the company, a secure financing service that business owners everywhere can truly rely on. I know a little bit about this. It's, you know, you got to make payroll, but nowadays people pay you 30, 60, 90 days out. Still got to pay your employees in a prompt fashion. OnDeck can give you that bridge. Boy, and they have a nice, easy, secure web platform and a mobile app, too, so you can see where you stand, see where your account is. If you're a small business owner, you need access to capital. There's no shame in that. That's normal. That's just, you know, how it works sometimes. OnDeck.com/tech guy. Because you're a Tech Guy listener, you'll get a free no sales pitch consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. They'll explain it all to you. They'll tell you how much it'll cost. They'll give you the peace of mind that, you know, it's working. You can apply online or phone and get approved in minutes, but get that free consultation to it. OnDeck.com/tech guy. ONDECK.com/tech guy for your free consultation. On Deck for small business loans from 5,000 to 500,000 as fast as 24 hours. OnDeck.com/tech guy. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Some classic Stones going back in the vault. Big Pee Wee digging in the vault. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have a question, you want to talk high tech, I'd love to do it with you. Normally, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, joins me, but Black Friday apparently really took it out of him. He goes crazy on Black Friday because the TV deals are unbelievable, and he's a little under the weather, so he's going to take the day off and be back next week. Cyber Monday's coming up. This is, you know, it's all... So the reason it was originally called Black Friday is it's a chance for retailers to get back in the black. You know, the old accounting colors. Red means you're losing money. Black means you're making money. So the idea was this is such a big sale day, the day after Thanksgiving in the U.S. And now it's, even though not Thanksgiving's not celebrated worldwide, Black Friday is such a big, big shopping day that retailers can get back in the black. And then along comes the internet, which is a good thing. I don't know if you've ever waited in line at a Walmart, but it's a lot better to shop online on Black Friday. And now because, you know, it's the internet, we don't have to make it one day. We can make it all month. So the deals will generally continue not only through the weekend, but often through the rest of the month, sometimes well into December. You know, why not? And you can do a lot of this stuff online. Even go to Walmart online. So they for briefly called it Cyber Monday on Monday. I guess they still call it Cyber Monday, but that doesn't make any sense. The reason they called it Cyber Monday going back in time, so you got to talk to an old guy like me who understands the genesis of these terms, was because, and you'll see how dated this sounds now, people had faster internet at work, so they would wait until they went to work on Monday to do their shopping. I'm almost certain you have faster internet at home than you do at work now, and certainly a lot easier to use. So Cyber Monday is Monday. Then somebody came along and said, we should make Tuesday Giving Tuesday. Okay, Giving Tuesday is Tuesday. And then let's get back to shopping on Wednesday, but it doesn't have a name yet, but give it time. Worn out Wednesday. Anyway, the good deals will persist. This is a good time to shop. I know what one of the things Scott would tell you with TVs is this is probably the best time of the year to buy TVs, except for maybe just right before the Super Bowl when a lot of retailers will cut prices on TVs. Now, people may say, well, I don't want to buy a TV online, but I have now bought the last several TVs I've purchased from Amazon, and they actually ship them pretty well. You can get white glove service if you want where they'll – take it out of the box, they'll bring it in, they'll set it up, make sure it works before they leave. That's kind of nice. Usually not very expensive, sometimes included in the price. And I've actually had pretty good results buying TVs from Amazon. Even giant, big 70-inch TVs. So that's probably a place to look, but I would also look at your big box stores and other places, some amazing prices, Vizios. We talked last week about some of the best deals. The other thing I would recommend before you head out on your shopping spree this weekend is to check the wirecutter.com. And you hear me talk about this all the time. New York Times bought them a couple of years ago. It was originally started by a guy from Gizmodo, Brian Lamb, who said, you know, we do all these product reviews on Gizmodo, but it's overwhelming for people. He noticed, and I've noticed this too, people just want, just tell me the one thing. Tell me what to buy. I don't want to see 15 different things. I want the one thing. What's the best TV? What's the best Wi-Fi router? What's the best tablet? The best laptop? The best camera? What's the best? And so that's what they started doing at thewirecutter.com, is just looking at everything and saying, this is the one we really like. This is the one you should look at. And then now, because it's hard to say what the best is, they'll give you the best deal, the best, and then they'll say, but if, you know, you can spend a little more, here's a, you know, the step up version. They've added a few, but it still focuses on what's the best. Like, what's the best portable laptop charger? The Mophie Power Station AC, they say. And then there's a budget pick, and then there's other things, you know. So I would recommend, before you head out, the Wirecutter. The other thing they've been doing, and I don't know if they're still doing it, but they do on Black Friday, is they do this too on Amazon's Prime Day. They look at the deals, and they say, this one is a deal. This one's not a deal. This one looks good, but it may not. You may be able to do a better price somewhere. TheWireCutter.com. Back to the phones. Let's see who's next here. Line four, Ruben, Kelowna, British Columbia. Hello, Ruben.
Hello. I was wondering if you have any tips on portrait and landscape photography.
Oh, you mean whether you should take pictures with the camera upright or sideways?
I have.
Or do you mean? Oh, you don't. Oh, you mean pictures of people versus pictures of land? I get it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, actually, the computer industry has co-opted those terms, haven't they?
Yeah.
So, which do you want to do? Because they're really different.
I've been more focused on landscape photography.
All right. So generally, when people do landscape photography, they do wider lenses, although that's not always the best way to do it, but they do wider lenses because you want to get the whole horizon or get the whole mountain, that kind of thing. Wider, if you're using an interchangeable lens camera, then wider would be something like anything from 16 to 35 millimeters. If you're using a point-and-shoot, it'll be zoomed all the way in, right? And that's usually on a point-and-shoot about 24 millimeters. So that's slightly wide. Now, the problem with wide is as you get to the edges of a wide, like 16 and wider, it gets a little distorted. It gets a little curvature in there, and that may not be something you want. So you may be zooming in a little bit from 16. 24 usually. I have a 24 lens I really like. It's not just for, by the way, I use it not just for buildings and landscapes, but it's a great people lens for street shooting and for parties and that kind of thing. It gets more of it's a good lens for storytelling. Portrait is the opposite. Portrait, you usually want to focus on a person or a pet, one thing, and you want everything to fall out in the background. And choosing a portrait lens is almost the opposite of a landscape lens. A landscape lens will be wider. It's usually in daylight, so it doesn't have to be super fast. You do want good quality so you don't get lens distortion, or they call it aberrations. But the portrait photography, I like them a little bit longer. People often want 85 millimeters, so you don't have to get right up in somebody's face. The other reason for that is you'll notice with a wide-angle lens, if you get up in somebody's face, their nose takes on huge proportions, which can be fun, but often not very flattering. So often you'll see people recommending 80. And when I say the lens length, 85 millimeters or 35 or 16, I'm talking on a full frame lens. If you're using a smaller frame like APS-C or Micro Four Thirds, there's a multiplier. But sometimes they'll say same as 85 millimeters on a full frame lens. 85 millimeters, and then sometimes you want it to be fast. You want it to be fast, not necessarily because you're taking it in dim light, although often you are. Some of the best portraits are somebody sitting by a window with light coming in from the side, natural light, and that may be a little darker. So a fast lens is good for that, but the main reason you want a fast lens is for a reduced depth of field. And this gets a little bit complicated, but you'll know if you look at people like Annie Leibovitz, the great photographers, if they have a background, often they'll do it on a white background. They'll have a seamless background, so there's nothing to distract from the person's face. But if they don't have that, if they're doing it on a street or if they're doing it somewhere where there's stuff going on, you'll notice that the background is blurry. That's because they have a shallow depth of focus. The focus is on the person's face. Everything behind that person is blurry. And you do that with a wide open lens, f1.4. F1.8, F2, or maybe even down to F1.2. So you let more light in, but you also blur the background. That makes a good portrait lens. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Tara's in Barstow, California. Hello, Tara.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, my pleasure.
How are you doing today?
I'm very well.
Happy
How are you? Happy Thanksgiving, Tara.
I'm doing great. I have so many questions to ask you, but I'll pare it down to just a couple.
Okay.
I scoured the internet ads before Black Friday for all the retailers, and I'm really interested in a laptop costing between $300 and $450. I'm interested in a semi-fast processor, generally for business stuff and word processing, but I've had problems with laptops in the past. So something like the i5 or the i7 Intel processor would probably be good, but I'm not the tech girl, so I wanted to ask you about the processors.
I wouldn't worry too much about the processor. An i5 will be just fine. You certainly don't need an i7, especially your price point. I mean, your price point is so low that you probably aren't going to have that choice. You might, but that's that. Now you're getting down into i3 or, you know, Pentium Gold or Pentium Y territory. You're getting down into the lower end stuff. But honestly, for most applications, that's fast enough for email, surfing the web, word processing. Is there anything you do that is more heavy duty? Do you do big spreadsheets, that kind of thing?
I do Photoshop, but I don't have to do Photoshop on the laptop.
Okay.
It's just an extra convenience.
Yeah.
And the Black Friday models seem to be the Dell Inspiron. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the 3000 model or the 5000 model, and I've just heard some really bad reviews on it, that the outer part is made of plastic
yeah.
and not very durable.
That's what you're gonna. So this is what you're gonna find when you, you know, there's a direct correlation between the quality of a laptop and how much you spend on
right.
it.
Right.
So that's what you're gonna find is a laptop in the $300 price range is gonna be made of plastic. You might now. This might be really out of left field, but there are Chromebooks that are in that price range, like the Acer Spin 13, which is, I think, a really nice, a solid aluminum body laptop. It's fast.
Really?
Yeah. But it's not running Windows. It's running Chrome OS. Now, if everything you do can be done in a browser, then I think it's a very good choice. It has an i5 in it. It's got a great screen. It is all aluminum. I think it's a very good choice. Very popular. It's a little bit more expensive than you want, but it shouldn't. I haven't seen the Black Friday deal, so I would look around for the Spin 13 and see what kind of deals you can find. Oh, wait a minute. I take it back. They're charging a lot for that one. Wow. The cheapest version of that is $400. I see. That's not so far off your price point.
No, yeah. no. And, yeah. I, and I've seen Chromebooks, but I wasn't sure how well I could rely on it for my needs.
That's the real question. No Photoshop, although Adobe is starting to move stuff. Anything that can be run as a Chrome extension can work. Plus, the Android store works. So there is Photoshop for Android, which is a lighter version of Photoshop, but not bad. And Adobe's moving more towards putting all of its stuff on touch first type environments. What you'll lose is Microsoft Office. You can't run Office on a Chromebook, but you can run the web versions, which I think are very good.
Open and in a lot software.
Yeah, most people who use Chromebooks will use the Google Office, which works very well with it, and use Google Drive as their storage. And the advantage of that is you can log into any Chrome OS device with your Google account, and all of your stuff is there. You're not storing it on the laptop directly. Plus, it's much more secure than any Windows computer. I mean, by a...
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's a huge advantage in my book. But you're right. It may not do everything you want. So that's one thing to think about.
And also, what do you think about the warranties? So, I went to Dell.com, I could get a 4-year warranty for $179, but... I wanted to know your opinion.
Well, I have mixed feelings about warranties. Some of it depends on how fumble-fingered you are, how likely you are to break the laptop. I never buy the warranties. Remember, that's a profit center for the company that sells them. They make money on it. It's basically insurance, and you know how insurance works. They statistically figure out how many laptops they're going to have to repair and how much that's going to cost them, and then they charge, 20% more than that, and they get to keep the difference. And so I always self-insure. I always presume that I'm fairly careful with my stuff. I rarely break it. Sometimes that's different for portable stuff like tablets and phones. Sometimes I'll get AppleCare, for instance, on my iPad. But most of the time I don't, because I figure I'm going to be ahead as long as I'm gentle with this stuff by not buying it. So it's up to you. Now, the other thing is I don't call support. I am my own support.
Right.
For better or worse.
So just give me your cell phone.
There you go. Give me $100 and you can call me anytime. No, so Dell support is better if you pay for it. It's not very good if you don't pay for it. But if you pay for it, but that's different from the warranty. That's like the higher level support. So there's all sorts. And remember that often the warranties are just extending the existing manufacturer's warranty. It's always warrantied for a year. And then you get a second year or third year. It doesn't cover accidental damage. If you drop it, you still pay for it to get it fixed. It only covers. So I generally don't think getting an extended warranty is worth it. If you want to get damage protection, that's different. But I don't think extended warranty is really worth it.
Okay.
All right. Unless you're going to drop it a lot.
Thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Enjoy your new system.
Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I have fun shopping. It's so tempting, and I think you all know this, with the deals that are out there to go out and maybe buy something you don't need or more than you need. And the real risk on that is a lot of the things that they have great deals on are devices that didn't sell well or maybe are last year's models. You can get a great deal, but you can't just walk in the door and get a great deal. It's going to take some research on your part to make sure that you are, in fact, getting a good deal. That's why I mentioned the wire cutter and places like that. That's kind of the Consumer Reports for the digital age. I think Consumer Reports is still out there, but I just think for electronic goods, I really like the wire cutter. Let's maybe take a break for news at the top of the hour. We can talk more about holiday shopping. A lot of people want to buy stuff. And I'll be glad to help you do that. But maybe you've got a technology question. You want to understand something a little bit better. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Hour 2 of the Tech Guy Show coming up. You can also go to our website. When we talk about something, when I mention a product or explain something, we put that all up on the website. We call them show notes. Thanks to James DeRuvo, who's writing them right now. The website is techguylabs.com. And by the way, it's free. I know a lot of times people say, and it's just $12 a month. No, it's free. It's free. It's zero. $0 a month, and there's no sign up. It's just there for your assistance. TechGuyLabs.com. We'll come back. More of your calls coming up right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. All that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you have a question, you want to talk high tech, I'm here for you. Let's go to line 3 and Cheryl in Riverside, California. Hi, Cheryl.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. Happy Thanksgiving.
Long-time listener and actually 2 times visitor back when you were in the brick house.
Nice.
Yeah, my husband and I visited a while back.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah. Well, I play Pokemon Go like you do.
Oh, yay.
Yay.
Are we friends? Are we friends?
No, we're not. We should be.
We must become friends.
Yeah.
I can make room for you. I'll kick somebody out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You'll tell me your friend number. I don't know if you want to do it on the air. Actually, if you did, you'd probably make a lot of friends.
Yeah. I'd have to find it.
That's okay.
It'd take too long.
That's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I have a
Happy Community Day, by the way. You should get out of here. Stop listening to the radio or actually put on some headphones and go travel around and pick up some fun Pokemon. It's a big...
Yeah.
Big...
My daughters, actually, and I play, and we've done the last 3 Community Days together.
Oh.
It's been a lot of fun.
There's a big one going on
December 1st.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. November,
it's gonna be fun.
November 30th through December 2nd.
Yep. Be very fun. But anyway, I have a ZTE Axon 7 that you had recommended a couple of years back.
Those were such great phones.
Yeah. But I dropped it a while back.
Yeah.
And luckily it came back alive.
Oh.
Ever since, I've had issues with GPS connection when playing the game and network errors.
That's just Pokemon Go. That I can tell you right now. I have a Galaxy Note 9, a Pixel 3 XL, an iPhone XS Max, XS Max, and I have the same exact issues.
Oh, no.
But it's Pokemon Go. Okay. It's the worst. It's the worst. We all have to, suffer. Basically, you'll get that spinning ball. The server will be down. It'll crash. It is a very buggy game and has been since day one. I don't know if you started way back in July of 2016.
I did 2 days after it.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
They've slowly kind of fought their way back, but I noticed that it comes down, the servers go down a lot. I would never judge connectivity on Pokemon Go.
Okay.
Now, if you go out and you're surfing the net and the Chrome or, something else is causing problems for you, then maybe, but never judge connectivity on Pokemon Go. It's because remember, connectivity is not merely your connection to the internet; it's their connection to the internet. And even though they're using Google's servers, you'd think they'd be reliable. But I think it's a software issue for the company. And don't forget, part of the problem is success.
Yeah,
and I think people are back playing that game. It was insane 2 years ago, but I think people are back playing. And so as a result,
all of us older folks, too.
Isn't it funny? Did you see the guy in Taiwan who has 7 phones on his bicycle?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I saw that.
He drives around on his bicycle with 7 phones, all playing Pokemon Go. That's a little out of control.
I know.
My wife said the other day to me, she said, I'm stopping. I'm not going to play. I can't do this. I have too many other things in life. It's too addictive. And I kind of don't blame her.
Yeah.
You know what I'm looking forward to? The same company, Niantic, that makes Pokemon Go, is working with Warner Brothers. And next year, and I'm hoping it'll be early next year, but sometime next year, they're going to do a Harry Potter version of it.
Oh, fun.
Where you'll be a wizard, you'll cast spells, there'll be fantastical creatures all over.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Doesn't that sound like fun?
Yeah, it does.
I'm going to play. I already said, Lisa, when that comes out, I'm playing that. I'm leaving Pokemon Go, too.
Yep. Well, if it's not my phone issue necessarily.
I wouldn't blame the phone. Yeah. I would just, but what I would do is try other internet connected stuff. See how your email works.
Right.
Browser. Maybe get put a speed check program on your phones, like Speed Test.
Okay.
And run that from time to time and check. Because I think what you'll find is that Pokemon Go is wildly unreliable, but it doesn't mean your connection is unreliable.
Okay. If I decided I wanted to upgrade my phone.
Still time to get a new phone.
It has been a year and a half.
Yeah, it's been a while. Every 2 years you should upgrade.
Yeah, I kind of like doing a unlocked that I can take it to AT&T and just do a pay-as-you-go type of thing, which is what I did with this phone.
Sure.
So what do you recommend kind of in that mid-range Android level?
There's some excellent Android phone. In fact, really, there's some question about why anybody would buy an iPhone, given the really good choices out there for Android devices at half the price. Even today, you can get the latest Google Pixel 3 Now, it's from Verizon, although if you go through a few hoops, you can it's unlocked and you can move it back to AT&T.
Okay.
But for $400 off right now.
Ooh.
So that puts it in that exact $400 price range for you. The other phones that I would absolutely take a look at, and again, look for Black Friday deals. Everybody's really dealing, wheeling and dealing. And actually, I want to mention this, but then we're going to maybe a little later talk about it. Huawei, which is a Chinese company, makes an amazing phone.
Mm-hmm.
The one that might be less expensive is the P20. It's super fast and powerful. But they also have a very nice modern phone. That the P20 came out 6 months ago. But the newest Huawei is maybe even more amazing. I just don't know if you'll be able to get a great deal on it. It's the Mate 20 Pro.
Okay.
And the cameras on that are incredible. Then at a lower price point, I've always been very happy with Motorola's G series. I think the current one is the Moto G6.
Okay.
Those are very good. And all of these you'll be able to get unlocked.
Right.
And then I think a lot of people consider the best Android phone out there right now to be the OnePlus 6T.
That's the 6T, yeah. I think I heard you talking about that a couple
times. A lot of people love this phone, always sold unlocked, state of the art. Because Black Friday prices are dramatically lower, you might be able to get this. You know, it's the OnePlus 6 starts at $429. I think the 6T is a little bit more expensive.
Okay.
But, boy, I tell you, the 6T list is $549. But that means if you shop around, you should be able to get it even less.
Oh, sounds
and that
good.
Is a spec. That may be the best Android phone out there at that price for sure.
All right. Well, thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah. You got to get two phones. That way you can play Pokemon Go twice.
Yeah, we raid a lot. And
actually, do you?
There's people I see, 2, 3, 4 accounts, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's crazy.
How old is your daughter?
I have two. One's 21, almost 21. The other one's almost 23.
It's a great way to kind of hang with them and
and
play with them. You know, they're doing the Snapchat and all the young people things, but you could at least do Pokemon Go together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I think that's great. I see a lot of families playing together. I think that's really wonderful. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. It. Enjoy. Always glad to help another Pokemon Go player. Now, Huawei is an interesting issue because the U.S. State Department is now telling not only American tech companies, but allies to not use Huawei. Now, they're not talking about the Huawei phones or laptops particularly. They're talking about the 5G network equipment because Huawei is the global leader in that. The problem is Huawei was founded in China by a veteran of the Chinese military, and apparently our government is of the opinion that the Chinese government could get their fingers in the Huawei hardware and perhaps use it to bring down our networks and that kind of thing, or spy on them, worse. I don't think, honestly, and I use a Huawei phone, the P20, and I had a Huawei laptop for review, and I don't honestly worry about the Chinese government spying on me. I can understand why our government might be worried about a widespread use of Chinese networking equipment in the U.S. and among allies. But many allies have the same fear, but also say, but this is the only gear we can get. It's the best gear out there. So it's an interesting conundrum. And remember that our government has also declared a trade war with China. And it's hard, and this is the sad fact of modern day politics, it's hard to know if there's a legitimate intelligence concern about Chinese companies or if it's more rhetoric, anti-Chinese rhetoric. It's more of the trade war. And I, you know, even the security gurus I know are baffled. They don't know what to think. There's always this potential, and you can understand with networking equipment that there'd be this real fear that a Chinese, you know, a network based on Chinese gear, let's say we set up, you know, Verizon sets up its 5G network and uses all Huawei equipment, which it's likely to do. really could be could make us vulnerable if they decided to pull the plug. I don't know what to think. What do you think? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It might come down to your political belief as opposed to the thing I care about is the technical issue. The Tech Guy podcast today brought to you by Helix. This is the new way to get your DNA. I love Helix. Helix is on a mission to empower everyone to improve their life through DNA. This is a great time. Their Cyber Week sales are on until November 26th. So if you've always thought it'd be really cool to know what your DNA is and to find out what that means, this is the place to go. They capture 100 times more data than the other DNA services. This is next generation DNA testing. 100 times more data than most other at-home tests. And they do it with one sample. You spit into a little vial. You send it in a month or two later. I think it takes about a month. You'll get all the information. They read all 20,000 genes. That is not true for most of these other guys. That's important because they code for proteins. That's the functional players in the body known as the exome. So if you can look it up on Wikipedia, read about the exome, that's what they get. This is not genotyping. This is the full exome. So you get ancestry, sure, but more than that, you get real actionable insights that can help you improve your nutrition, your health, your sleep. Whether you want to understand where you came from, improve your fitness routine, even find your next bottle of wine. Yes. So here's how it works. You do the basic package. You send it in, or you can choose. They have a Mayo Clinic package, National Geographic package. You could choose the package you want. I did the National Geographic Ancestry package. You can just do the base model. And then you can, once they do the sample, they've got it all. And then you can buy whatever you want to know. So you don't buy more than you need. You get exactly what you want to know. Get your first product. You get everything you need to get started, including a prepaid shipping box. You can spit in the vial. It's very easy. Send it back. No doctor needed. You'll get your test results and then access to the Helix store where you can unlock from over 30 reports, over 200 insights, what matters to you the most. I actually like the way they do this. So you only get the information you want, but it's all available. And what I really like is as more information becomes available, you don't have to redo the test. They've got everything and they can give you more information. By the way, I asked them because I know everybody's concerned these days about privacy. I asked them about privacy, and I'm very happy to say they have a security guy who is obsessive. They keep your stuff very, very private. They don't just give it away to anybody who asks. So your genome, your exome is completely secure and private. This is the National Geographic one, which is really fun. If you're interested in ancestry, I found out, for instance, that I have a match to Napoleon, Plutarch, Darwin, and Lincoln. My son was mad because he said, I didn't get Darwin. Well, you don't get everything, right? You don't get everything. I got Lincoln on my father's side. It shows you the maternal and paternal matches. My mom connects me back to Abraham Lincoln and some fancy lady. That's Napoleon and Ben Franklin are from my father's side. I love that. This is so cool. So cool. So that's just part of what you get from the genome. So this is the National Geographic one. But you can get the variety of there's a Mayo Clinic gene guy that gives you all sorts of information about medical stuff, you know, traits, carrier check by SEMA4. They're going to do BRCA. They have an Alzheimer's APOE test. That's the next one I want to do. Doesn't mean you're going to get Alzheimer's, but you can see if you have the genes that are connected to Alzheimer's. There's an inherited cholesterol test, inherited diabetes test. Their health partners make it easy to connect with a genetic counselor, so you're not alone when you learn this stuff. It's really fascinating. And the good thing is when you purchase a partner product from the marketplace, they only share the specific parts of your DNA necessary to provide you with the insights you've purchased. So nobody gets your full exome. That's stored safely and securely by Helix. Give the gift of knowledge this holiday season. It's a great time to do it. Helix, H-E-L-I-X.com. up to 50% off all products until November 26th. So they're doing a big Black Friday deal right now. HELIX.com. And take advantage of these great sales. Up to 50% off everything. $44.99 to get this to start with the DNA Discovery Kit. It's really a great deal. HELIX.com. I love doing this. Poppy was telling me that they're related to Prussian soldiers, two Prussian counts that left Germany 200-300 years ago. They were brothers. They were brought to the United States, and they went their separate ways. And he's, according to the DNA, because he did the DNA thing, he's related to one brother, and he met somebody at his church who's related to the other brother. Their both last name is Rosenthal. They're both related to the Prussian brothers. This is the kind of fun stuff you get. Helix.com. Begin a lifetime of discovery and save right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Article in the Wall Street Journal this week, actually updated yesterday. Headline, Washington asks allies to drop Huawei. Stu Wu in London and Kate O'Keefe in Washington reporting, the U.S. government has initiated an extraordinary outreach campaign to foreign allies trying to persuade wireless and internet providers in these countries to avoid telecommunications equipment from China's Huawei technologies, according to people familiar with the situation. Now, Huawei makes laptops and phones. The phone is hard to get here. You can get it unlocked from various resellers because this has happened before. Huawei announced the P20 last year, and when they made the announcement, they said, and here's the good news, it's going to be carried by Verizon and AT&T in the United States, at which point somebody, and this is the problem, I don't know who, and it's not reported who, somebody from the U.S. government went to Verizon and AT&T and said, it would be a good idea if you were not to carry these Huawei phones. So Verizon and AT&T dropped them. By the way, Huawei was furious. I remember the CEO of Huawei coming on stage at CES last January, irate. Because of this, they had a deal, and the deal was reneged on with Verizon. And they decided, well, without carrier support, we can't sell this phone. It's not like it wouldn't work, not like you can't buy it unlocked and use it anywhere. But people in the United States apparently don't buy phones if they don't buy them at the carrier, you know, from the carrier, through the carrier. There's very little sales of third-party phones, so they just decided not to waste the marketing monies. So they sell it in every country of the world except the U.S., including Canada. It's a great phone. I bought one. You can buy them unlocked on Amazon. I bought one. I was very impressed. It's got a great, maybe the best camera available today. Then they came out with the Mate 20, and that's also a beautiful phone. With through-the-screen fingerprint reading, but they're not selling in the U.S. They do sell their laptops in the U.S., but it's not the laptops or the phones now that these unnamed American officials are worried about, according to the Wall Street Journal. Officials have briefed government counterparts and telecom executives in friendly countries where Huawei equipment is already in wide use, including Germany, Italy, and Japan, about what they see as cybersecurity risks. It's essentially a U.S. campaign to keep Huawei out of the U.S. Some officials see the initiative as part of a broader technological cold war between U.S.-led allies and China for control of a world that's increasingly digitally connected and thus increasingly vulnerable to surveillance and malfeasance. So that's the question. Huawei says again and again, no, we're not spying on anybody, but of course you'd expect that. What also doesn't mean that because they're a Chinese company, the Chinese government could not just go to this company and say, okay, now you will be spying. But that's a problem from the Chinese point of view with American-made equipment, too, I might add. I think it's a tough one, particularly because as we move to 5G, which is the next very high-speed cellular data connection, there's a big market for 5G hardware, a lot of pressure to upgrade as quickly as possible. And guess who makes the best 5G gear? Huawei. Huawei is the world's number two smartphone maker. Number two. Number one is Samsung. No, Apple's not on that list. Because we're talking globally. In the U.S., Apple's number one. But in globally, Huawei's number two. Samsung's number one. And is the Huawei is the global leader for telecom equipment, like the hardware that goes in cell towers, internet networks, and other infrastructure. Now, in 2012, the Congress and the U.S. Commerce Department labeled Huawei a national security threat, along with another Chinese telecom company, ZTE. And at that point, the Commerce Department recommended that U.S. telecoms not buy equipment from them. I don't think that made much difference. Because, again, they make the best stuff. Even without U.S. business, Huawei dominates the world telecom market with a 22% global share. Nokia, number two, is 13%. Ericsson, 11%. Another Chinese company, ZTE, is in fourth place at 10%. So a third of all of the telecom equipment in the world is run by these two Chinese companies. Several other members of the Five Eyes, that's the five-member intelligence pact among English-speaking countries, U.S., Australia, England, they've also said, Australia's banned. We don't like the Huawei. Australia's banned Huawei and ZTE from its 5G networks. The UK says they're reviewing their networks. So it sounds like there's an issue. And the real question for me and my advice to you is, well, does that mean you shouldn't buy gear from Huawei? Well, probably I would err on the side of caution. Why not? However, I got to point out that if you buy an iPhone, that's made in China with mostly Chinese parts. Even if you buy a Samsung phone, which are made in South Korea and Thailand, there will be Chinese parts in this thing. You'd be hard-pressed to buy any electronic gear that doesn't have something made in China. Wall Street Journal story goes on. In Italy, U.S. officials met with executives of one of Italy's major telecom carriers to explain the risk of using Huawei and ZTE equipment. They said, well, the Italian carrier, we're aware of the risks, but we're going to keep using them. We cannot ignore Huawei because they're a leading telecom equipment provider worldwide, and that's a very tough call. The German government's declined to comment for this story. Japanese officials said in August they were studying restrictions, but as yet they have made none. It's one of those stories where it's hard to really know. It's hard to really know. I just, and it's hard to know what to do because we don't, to be honest, we don't make anything in the United States like that. That's one of the things the U.S. government's trying to do is fund development of American technology companies to start, you know, companies like Cisco and Broadcom start making stuff here. But the problem is a lot of that stuff they design, like Apple, is designed in California but made in China. And we really are having an economically difficult time weaning ourselves off of Chinese manufacture. It's just so cheap. I don't know. I mean, cyber warfare is going to be the top story of the next decade. Easily. No question about it. And I can't say I look forward to covering it, but I will. We have to, right? Should it change your buying habit? Probably not. 88, they're not spying on you and me. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones right after this. I have to say, when I first set up the Huawei P20, the first thing it said is, do you mind if we send everything that's going on in this phone back to the office, basically. They asked for permissions to access all the data on the phone. That was enough for me to not use it, but honestly, I don't know how different that is from using any Android phone, right? The whole thing is odd. Yeah. And I think it's unfortunately tainted by politics, and that's the real problem. is that we are engaged in a trade war with China, and it's hard to know how much of this is that and how much of it is actual technical issues. Normally, Johnny Jett would be joining us at this time. He is traveling. What a shock. Traveling? How dare he? He is jetting somewhere, but he will arrive and be on the show tomorrow at this time. So we'll talk to Johnny Jett tomorrow. But that's fine with me because it gives me time to take more calls. And on we go to line two, Steve in West Virginia. Hello, Steve.
Help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope.
Okay, Steve, what can I do for you?
Well, before I say my problem, I got to say I'm so thankful for you, Leo.
Oh,
it's great to hear your voice every week.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. Well, I'm thankful to you for calling.
Well, great. I have what I'm wondering is it may be a Trojan attack or something. As soon as I probably click something wrong on my Android phone, Galaxy, I started seeing the ad choices banners popping up on not only the browsers, but in apps like TV Guide and Weather Channel.
Yeah.
And soon after, in other devices like my old phone and even my iPad, TV Guide app, and it has ad choices banners.
Yeah. So ad choices are Google ads. But that doesn't mean you weren't infected because you shouldn't, as you know, you shouldn't see these anywhere but your browser. And the ad choices thing, you know, you get there, they put a little thing, you can click on it, and it's, all it does is tell you, well, you could turn this ad off, but you're not going to get rid of ads. You certainly should go into your Chrome settings on Android, and actually it's in the Chrome app, go to settings, and turn off pop-ups and redirects.
I think I did that.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. That's the first thing you do. And
yeah.
This is, unfortunately, seems to be a common issue. And maybe the trick is then also to clear everything out of your browser. You know, we're used to this kind of stuff on desktops, but it's kind of relatively new on mobile. Android, you know, there was a big issue with Android malware recently. Google blocked almost a dozen programs, 13 malware apps, from the Play Store because they had these were malicious apps that had somehow gotten into the Play Store, and over 500,000 installs. That's what's really scary.
Well, could this have suddenly spread to my other devices through my Google account or maybe the router?
So it's not just on the Android phone, it's everywhere.
It's even in my iPad, yeah.
Oh, well, that doesn't make any sense. So the that's from Chrome. So what do you have Chrome installed in your iPad?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
But
Chrome shouldn't be able to do pop-ups anywhere on the iPad except within Chrome. You're seeing... I mean, you may just be seeing ads. I mean, ads often say ad choices on there. That's just, those are Google ads that have that ad choices little thing in there. It's not a separate, it's not malware particularly. It's just the what Google puts in its ads up in the upper right hand corner. Extensions sync to Chrome, but they shouldn't, doesn't give them permission to run on iOS. So if you're seeing those same ads, are they popping up over websites? What are on apps? What are you seeing?
Yeah, on apps like the TV Guide app and the Weather Channel.
Those are just ads. Welcome to the modern world of advertising-based apps.
Right, yeah, but I don't remember seeing them in the TV Guide ad before with the ad choices. I didn't know if I should do a reset of my router.
I could see maybe that there's Android malware and then maybe Chrome is syncing to other Android devices, but it will absolutely not sync over to the iOS. So what's happening is you're just seeing now all of a sudden ads like, you know, TV Guide is a free app, except that it's not because the way they pay for it, unfortunately, is with ads, and you're seeing a lot of ads. I agree with you. I find it annoying. If you see that ad choices in the upper right-hand corner, I believe that's just the normal Google ad choices link. You can block them, try getting ad blockers on iOS. It's a little complicated. You have to download an ad blocker from the App Store. I use Crystal, but there's others. You download the ad blocker. Then you have to go into settings and turn on the ad blocker, enable it. Although I think when you download and install Crystal, it'll explain this. And then you have to turn it on for Safari. I think these are just the apps. I think it's just the apps. I think this is how, you know, in Android there are ad blockers as well, and there's ways to do it. But I don't think this is unusual. If you get a free app and you don't like the ads, usually they'll offer an option to turn off ads by paying a buck or two. And I agree with you. They're very annoying, but that's what I do. I don't think this is malware. I'm looking at the chat room to see if anybody in the chat room has some better ideas. I think this is not malware. And, of course, ad blocking apps usually are limited just to your browser. They won't block ads in the apps. They'll only block ads in the browser. So you're going to be stuck with those as long as you use ad-supported apps. I should point out, as a free ad-supported radio show, that this is, I think, a legitimate way of monetizing. Somebody's got to pay for this stuff. An app costs a lot of money to make. We looked at making apps. I hired a company to make apps. I unfortunately hired the cheapest company I could find. That was a mistake, to make apps for Android and iOS for our podcast network. It was an Indian company. And we paid them $75,000 for an app that we just never released it because it was terrible. And that was because they were the cheapest, $75,000. So apps are expensive. Developers are expensive. And if an app is free, almost always there's some way they're making money. The least sneaky is just putting an ad on the app. Lots of apps do that. The most sneaky would be gathering personal information about you and selling that to the highest bidder. And that's a harder thing to turn off. I'd almost prefer to see apps with ads than apps without ads. A free app without ads, Facebook, Instagram. Well, that has ads, doesn't it? Facebook has ads, too. A free app without ads. We'll have to think of one of those. Maybe all the Google apps. There's a way they make money. You always have to ask yourself, well, how are they making money? I can't say I hate ads because ads put turkey on my table. And actually, I think it's a completely honorable way to monetize. I think it's one of the most honorable ways to do it. You basically, in return for your attention, whether it's in an app or on a radio show, we give you the free show, but we sell your attention to an advertiser who then plays an ad for you. That's how network TV works. That's how everything works. And I like that because I don't have to charge you for the radio show. There's a new economy kind of bursting out of podcasts that charge you and radio shows that you can't listen to unless you pay a fee. I don't know how well that's going to work. This works for some things. Wall Street Journal seems to make money on its subscription. But a lot of other free things that have been free in the past that try to charge you usually don't do that well. So we're going to stick with advertisers. I've been looking. I don't see anything with ad choices that's particularly malware-based. It's just ads. What are you going to do? You know, it's funny about public radio and TV is they're, in theory, not ad-supported. But they sure seem to be ad-supported. I hear ads at the beginning of every show. I hear ads in between every show. The only thing they don't do is interrupt shows in the middle with ads. But their podcasts do. So I think public television and radio has long ago abandoned that notion of non-commercial. And maybe they had to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Happy Thanksgiving weekend. Happy Black Friday weekend. Ad choices is a self-regulatory program for online internet-based advertising. And if you go to youradchoices.com, powered by the... So it's not a Google thing. It's powered by the Digital Advertising Alliance. Although I do see these on Google ads. So when you see an ad and you see the ad choices icon, you click on the ad choices icon. This is their verbiage, not mine, you get control over how information about your interests is used for relevant advertising. What this really is a response from the ad tech community to ad blockers and people being upset about how their privacy is being invaded and so forth. So, I mean, you might as well click it if you want. If you do, you'll see what, you know, what's going on. And you'll see the limited choices you have. You can't say, I don't want to see ads anymore. That is not one of the choices. I don't like ads. I don't want to see them. But if you see an ad, and they have an example at youradchoices.com. If you see an ad in the upper right-hand corner there, there's that ad choices thing. And if you click on it, you'll get some information basically saying, come on, man, you got to watch ads. That's the future. Come on, man. Mark, Castaic, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Hi, I'm trying to get a MS Access database that has client information to sync with an iPhone.
Sync to an iPhone app in particular, or?
No, just so I can access it from a iPhone so I can read the information.
Yeah.
Apple, it doesn't do it right now.
Yeah, Microsoft's done a good job of making a lot of their apps available on iOS. But I don't think they have a first-party app for iOS for the Access database. So I believe there are third-party clients. I'm looking at a couple, one called Access Prague. I don't know how good they are. I've never used them. But if you search for iOS and Microsoft Access, you'll find these third-party apps. Microsoft's done a great job of putting most of the Office apps on iOS. There's a touch-first. In fact, I know some Windows people are upset that the touch-first version of Microsoft Word and Excel came to iOS long before they came to Windows. But as far as I know, Microsoft has not done one themselves for Access. So there's okay. Access Database Manager for iPhone. You know, I don't know how polished these are. You're probably just going to want to browse through them and look at them. There's ACCDB. Northwind, let's see, how to get your Microsoft Access database on iOS. Here's an article. No, that's for Android. Yeah, but you need a third-party app, basically.
I was aware of that. I was just hoping for maybe a recommendation if you had one.
Yeah, I don't. I've never attempted this. But let's see. There is access via the web. You perhaps could use Safari to go to your Access database. I'll tell you what we're going to do, because the chat room is rife with recommendations here for MDB reader apps, for ways to do it through the web and so forth. We'll put those all up at techguylabs.com. I don't have a recommendation, only because I just don't have an experience doing this. It is a little odd that Microsoft has done such a good job of putting the other Office apps up on iOS, but they haven't done so for Access. Pocket Access is another one. I'm scanning through the chat room to see if there's any other recommendations. Obviously, you'll have to configure your Access database so it can be read over the net, and that's another reason why it may not be too popular, because, of course, that opens it up to all sorts of exfiltration. Anthony, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, and I am the most non-technical person. I'm a lot older than I sound, so bear with me. But I want to tell you that I do listen to your program.
Nice.
A whole lot, and you remind me of I'm in California, but I'm really from New Jersey. And back in New Jersey, it was on Channel 13, an artist guy who had a very soothing voice.
Bob Ross?
Yeah, I think that was his name.
Yes, with his puffy little clouds.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. You know, Bob Ross, the young generation has discovered Bob Ross. They love him, and I think that's why, because he's very soothing.
Very, very soothing. And I experienced the same thing with your voice.
Oh, thank you.
I started listening to you about a year and a half ago or a little more.
The Bob Ross of technology.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I hope this Bob Ross can help me with this
All right.
question. All right, so I have a big desktop Hewlett-Packard Pavilion with a Dell monitor, and it was running Windows 7, which I like, and I don't want to have a Windows 10. I got the thing where, update your computer, and after I did the updates, it seemed every time I would try to go on the computer, in a minute or so, it would shut off the keyboard and the mouse.
Oh, no.
Right. And after a whole long thing and talking to Microsoft, wherever they were, but I couldn't understand a word the man said, he was trying to tell me that the updates that are in my computer, my Windows 7 system, are for the Windows 10 and that it's a conflict and, give him $300 and they'll fix it.
No, I don't know where you got that guy, but that's not the guy to talk to for sure. That's not Microsoft. That's an interesting. I guess that could happen, but in theory, Microsoft Update is not going to do that. It's not. It's smart enough to only install updates for Windows 7 on a Windows 7 machine. So I don't know how you would have gotten that. It's a wired keyboard and mouse, right?
Yes.
So it's not that your battery's died. It's a physical. And you've tried other keyboards and mouse just
right.
to see.
That's
so
a problem. The keyboard and the mouse work on other computers.
Good. So, yeah, so at least we've narrowed it down. That's probably a driver issue because you have to have software on Windows to talk to those. It's a USB driver, the HID, or Human Interface Device driver. One possibility is to go into your device manager, and this is a little bit of brain surgery, but if you hit Windows key X and you click the device manager, in the pop-up menu, you'll see all the devices, and you should see. And actually, the first thing to look at is see if any of these devices have yellow triangles with exclamation marks or red X's. If that's the indicator that a driver is not working,
But right now, I believe I cannot even get the monitor to come on.
Well, the monitor's not working either.
Well, it would come on. It'll come on like it does now. Dell Ultra Sharp. It comes on. And, now it's showing me the whole, and then it goes black.
Oh, that's not good.
I'm in Windows Error Recovery. It says I can
Good. Start. Now, yeah, so this is more than just a driver issue. This is a much more serious issue.
Oh.
You probably are going to want to, if the fact that you were able to get into recovery is great, you might want to run those recovery utilities. Unfortunately, 7 is not as good at recovery as 10 is. 10, now you could basically fix this by an update. I think try these recovery things, see if it fixes it, but it may be time to reinstall Windows 7. How long has it been since you wiped the hard drive and installed Windows 7?
Wait a minute. I've never done that. This was, a computer that was donated to me.
Yeah, so it's pretty old. And this is also what happens with Windows over time as it gets less and less reliable. Could be a hard drive issue as well. Could be a failing hard drive. Sometimes when the hard drive fails, it fails in portions, not entirely. And it may be that those critical drivers are not getting loaded or they're corrupted. So all of those things are something to look at. Our show today brought to you, actually, if you're watching this on the Twit site, it's actually playing it for you right now by JW Player. Helping businesses, including us, make money on their video. It's the video player that makes you money, that makes you look. A lot of people, especially when they first start out, they just, they use YouTube or something else. The video is embedded on their site. It's got a big logo from some other company. Not to mention, if you've got a YouTube video playing on your site, then YouTube recommends other videos. You don't control that. People go off in the distance. It's why let Google keep most of your revenue? Why have an advertisement for YouTube on your site? Don't let YouTube steal viewers with their next video recommendations. Maximize your reach and revenue with the video player that matches your brand. That's why we use it, JW Player. We're not alone, by the way. Half a million websites use JW Player to deliver video to their audiences, including the Washington Post, Business Insider. Vice uses it. We use it. Because you can take control and upgrade your video player with JW Player. It's the most flexible HTML5 platform, and it's the best way to monetize. Now, I got to tell you, when somebody comes to visit your site, how fast that video loads is really important. I was talking to the JW, Yaron Vigering of JW Player, and he explained to me that the people's standards have changed dramatically. If that video doesn't start playing within 5 seconds, half of your audience will leave. That's why you want to use JW Player, the fastest player, and by the way, buffer-free technology. You'll be using JW Player's CMS for uploading and managing your videos. That guarantees high speed. Real-time video analytics, so you can understand how your content's performing. We have yet to find a feature that JW Player doesn't have. That's why we love it. JW Player is awesome. For a limited time, you can get a free ebook at jwplayer.com/twit, The Modern Publisher's Guide to Video Advertising. Everything you want to know about monetizing your video. They're very good at that. And when you visit jwplayer.com/twit and use the code TWIT at checkout, they've got a Black Friday special too. 50% off your Platinum subscription. 50% off. That's a limited time offer. Exclusive to TWIT TV listeners. So check it out today. jwplayer.com/twit. And use the code TWIT at checkout. It's really the best player. We tried them all. And it's the one we settle on. jwplayer.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're going to plant some happy little leaves over here and some puffy little clouds over there. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to call and ask a question, make a suggestion, I'll try to help. Our last caller, who was having trouble with his Windows 7 machine, is basically facing what happens. I think it's kind of, I guess, for want of a better term, bit rot. Happens over time, particularly with Windows. I think any computer will happen over time. It just, things get flaky. Stuff stops working. You add new programs on top of the old programs. You add new updates to the old flaws, and you know, it's like a house of cards. It just kind of gets less and less reliable. I don't experience this often because I will reinstall Windows pretty frequently. I would say at least once a year, if not more. Just start all over. It's a good argument for making a good backup. Of course, you got to have a strong backup at all times because you never know what's going to happen. But if you've been keeping your stuff backed up on an external drive, then it's a simple matter, really, to get to Windows. It's even simpler now in Windows 10 because it's actually built into the Windows 10 control panel, the recovery section. You can just wipe it out, start over. And honestly, I think that's a good idea, especially if, as in Anthony's case, you inherited the computer from somebody else. If you get a computer, a new-to-you computer that's been used by somebody else, whether you got it from work or from friends, I would... At that point, very important before you start using it, erase, and I mean erase everything. Don't just install a new copy of Windows on top of it, but go in the Windows installer, select options, and format the drive. Start all over because you don't want to inherit somebody else's problems, spyware, you know, malware, whatever is on that computer. You want to start fresh, and you haven't put anything of yours on it yet, so it's a good time to do it. So the very first thing you do when you get a new-to-you computer, a used computer, is wipe that drive out and reinstall Windows on top of it. Always, always, always. And maybe since you didn't do that, Anthony, in the first place, now would be a good time to do that. David in Burbank, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Hi.
Welcome.
How are you today?
I'm very well with my puffy little cup of coffee.
It was interesting. I made a note about Bob Ross because my wife would like to learn how to paint.
Oh, man. The good news is this is all available online. Twitch, the streaming, mostly for gaming, the streaming channel that's owned by Amazon, had a marathon of all of his shows, one after the other. And I think as a result, a whole new generation has discovered Bob Ross. He was on PBS from 83 to 94. Passed away that year. I mean, he worked till his death, so he's long gone. But I think he'd be gratified to know that people have rediscovered him as an art instructor. Really fun to watch. I would guess that most people who watched Bob Ross never actually painted anything. But if you wanted to become a painter, his technique was remarkable. I mean, you know, during a half-hour show, he'd make a beautiful painting. So, yeah, please let your wife know about him. Yeah, he's great. So what can it makes you want to paint, for sure. What can I do for you?
I'm moving to a property I just bought that is 2.5 acres. And the house is relatively in the center. And looking to get Wi-Fi, I have a greenhouse and a big 30 by 30 foot metal shop building. And I know the metal could be a problem.
Yeah,
but,
metal's always a problem. But there's windows in that shop building, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They're,
so the Wi-Fi will probably get in through the window.
I was looking at the Orbi.
Orbi's a great choice. Yeah,
the best, and it's on sale at Costco right now. So I bought it partly because I love their return policy in case it's not good enough.
That's right. And so they even have an outdoor satellite. So one of the nice things about the Orbi is you could, you know, put one on the outside of one of those buildings, which would, you know, maybe make it easier. The thing about Wi-Fi to understand is it's running at a microwave frequency, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. And the higher the frequency, the more likely to bounce off things. Wi-Fi is, I don't think anybody realizes this, intended to be direct line of sight. Now, fortunately, it bounces off walls, so you can bounce it around corners and things. But it's best, it works best, and you'll get best speed if you have line of sight. So if you can put an Orbi in the window near your router and then, you know, sight it to the outbuildings, to the greenhouse and the shop, you'll get good results. You could take the base unit, put it in your house near a window or in the window, ideally. If you can still see it, you know, through the window of the shop, put the second Orbi satellite there. Same thing in the other one. And that often will work. Wi-Fi is intended to go about 150 feet, though. So if you're farther than 150 feet apart, you might not get good results.
So okay, I'll have to do some.
This will give you your best. This will give you your best results. And another way to do it, if you can't put the Orbi in the house where the internet exists, in near a window, you could always get one of the outdoor Orbis, put it on the side of the house. It'll be able to see into the house, get that Wi-Fi, and then distribute it in a way that you can see it better.
So I was looking at also, there's a brand called Airstone, A-Y-R Stone, and some other things that are designed for farms and.
Yeah, so the old way of doing this,
they're
more expensive. Mesh Wi-Fi, which the Orbi is, the old way of doing it is with big antennas and high power distribution amps. So it's radio frequency. So with the way the Airstone and others work is with directional. So you'll see they have directional transceivers. They'll have antennas out on poles. You know, you can go as far as you want as long as you're willing to put base units and extenders within 150 feet of each other. You can just daisy chain them on out. So I think it's worth a try with the Orbi. Do you know how far your farthest outbuilding is from the house?
Well, I guess I was researching this some, and I don't think the Orbi had daisy chain when it was released, but I think it does now.
Yeah, it does.
And
yeah, it's a traditional mesh.
I think from the house to the greenhouse is less than 150 feet, I'm sure.
Good.
Probably from the greenhouse to the other building. So do you think Orbi, other than these like things designed for farms, is the
I think any mesh system is a good choice as long as you're within 150 feet of each other. Here's a website to look at that talks about Wi-Fi antennas, directional, omnidirectional, point-to-point, layouts and ways to do it. It's radiolabs.com. And they have a very complete knowledge base on all of this stuff. And they sell gear like the Airstone, actually for less than the Airstone. So it's worth reading up. They'll tell you kind of what I'm saying, but they can talk about the other alternatives like directional antennas and so forth. It is it's doable. You know, the best way to do it, it might be one thing to examine, is by stretching a wire, an Ethernet wire. That would give you the best performance. It may, you know, you might have to bury it.
Right. No, I would. Unfortunately, the previous owner buried a telephone cable from the house to the shop, but I don't know why I didn't bother with an Ethernet cable. But,
next time, anybody, if you're putting anything under the ground, don't put an individual wire, put conduit that you can pull wire through.
Yeah, I did ask him that, and it's not in conduit.
No, of course not. That would be too easy. I would try. Yeah. I think these wireless solutions are pretty good. You think you bought a good one, try the Orbi, see if it works. If it doesn't, go to radiolabs.com, and you can look. They have, you know, plans. They have ways to figure out what you need. It's actually a really great site for this kind of stuff. And they design their own equipment. You could even call them and explain it, and they'll give you some suggestions. Radiolabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little tiny time out for a word from our fine sponsors, and we'll have more of the show right after this. Stay right here. Everybody now, whoo! Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Corinne in Duarte, California. Is it Corinne or Corinne?
It's Corinne.
Hi, Corinne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you so much for calling. What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm a grandmother, and this stuff is all so new to me, but I have an iPad, an iPhone, and an iMac.
Oh, somebody loaded you up with technology. That's good.
Well, yeah, it's great, but,
but.
It's my Apple ID that I have a problem with.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Your Apple ID... Kind of like in Microsoft land, your Microsoft ID is the key to everything. You need to...
Right.
Yeah.
It's taken me a couple of years to figure that.
Yeah. So what's going... You know, by the way, you can always create a new Apple ID and start all over. But what?
Well, I do that, but then my husband screws it up. And
oh, you didn't tell the truth. The problem is not your Apple ID. The problem is your husband.
Well, maybe we could get rid of that, too.
Get a new one of those. Everything will be easy. No, I'm teasing.
He's all broken in.
Yeah, he's all broken in like a old pair of shoes. He's just comfortable, right? Yeah. So what is happening with your Apple ID?
Well, okay, when I make an Apple ID, it's taken me like 3 years to figure this out. Apple is the owner, the winner, the top guy. And then if I want to go talk to somebody like... in the app store, they'll ask for Apple, and I used to think, well, I got to change it so that it's specific for that.
Oh, yeah. So let me set it out so that I think the best thing is for you to kind of understand at a deep level what's going on here.
Yeah.
And I don't blame you, by the way. This is nutsy, and it just kind of grew like topsy out of, you know, over time, and I believe it. I don't blame you, Corinne, because it's a mess. You know, when we were kids, the only thing you ever had to remember was a combination of your locker.
Yeah, where
your skates were, and maybe your phone number.
Right.
And that's it. Nowadays, every site you go to, every app you load, every operating system, all of them have unique IDs, and then they all want different passwords, by the way. You should never reuse a password. So. You know, that'd be like using your phone number for your locker combination. It'd be just a bad idea. So it's gotten inhuman. No human can handle it. It's intolerable.
Right.
So for the Apple situation, you can have two different Apple IDs. Most people have one. One is your main Apple ID, what they call your iCloud account. They used to call it your Mobile Me account, but that was a flop. And then they called it your Mac.com account, and that was a flop. Now they call it your iCloud account, but it's all the same.
All the same.
And that will generally be your name or something like it, whatever you decide on, at iCloud.com. You know, Corinne at iCloud.com.
Right.
You may, though, also have a iTunes ID. That can be, doesn't have to be, separate. I do it that way because I just like to have them separate. And that can be any email. It doesn't have to be at iCloud.com, any email address, and then another password. I usually I have Leo Laporte at iCloud.com as my master Apple account. And then I use another email address and password for my iTunes. But you don't have to do that. You can have Corinne at iCloud.com. Then there's a password that goes along with that.
Yes.
That is to unlock. So when you set up your new Apple gear, whatever it is, your iPhone, your iPad, or your a Macintosh, you'll be logging in with that account. That's yours and forever. And by the way, your husband should have his own.
Yes, I've told him that.
Yeah. So he doesn't screw yours up.
Right.
B, because of, and this is something relatively new, Apple now has family sharing.
Yeah.
That lets you add his account to your account. So when you buy an app or a movie or a TV show or a song, he can get it too. That's family sharing. And that's nice because that was the main reason people would share an account is so that they all have the same music.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that anymore. So get him to get his own ID. Now, log into your computer is not your Apple ID, oddly enough. Same, when you log into your computer, you make that whatever you want. You can make that Corinne, just be the login Corinne and a password of your choosing. That's to get you into the computer. But if you go into the settings on your phone or your tablet or your computer, and there's an account section, and in the accounts will be your iCloud account. You can add a Google account to that if you want, or a Dropbox account. You know, other sites accounts can be in there as well. But your Apple account is for that. Now, when you get an app, the app may want to tie into your iCloud account for various reasons. If it's a calendar app, for instance, it'll tie into your iCloud account because that's where your calendars live. If it's an address book, same thing.
Yes.
And then the app itself, though, usually will have its own password, just like every website has its own password. Now, it might use your Apple email, but it can use another email. But you can use Corinne@iCloud.com for all of that because that's an email. This is, by the way, how Apple's confused it. That's also an email account. Oh, doesn't have to be your main one, but you get an email account when you set up an iCloud account.
Oh, gosh.
Does that make sense? You don't have to use it, though. You can use Corinne@gmail.com.
Right. I'm making it too difficult, I think.
I think probably.
Yeah.
The iCloud email is once you set up your iCloud account on your phone and your tablet and your laptop or your desktop is going to go into your Apple Mail. But Apple Mail can handle other mail accounts too. So if you wanted to, I keep my mail separate. I don't want all my mail to go to Apple. I use it, I have it go somewhere else. But you can, if you don't do a lot of mail, you can have Corinne@iCloud.com.
Okay.
But you got to keep track of all these passwords. Now, the good news is because you're all Apple, you can keep them in the Apple keychain. You can let Apple remember those, and it'll be available to you on your phone and your tablet as well, and your iPad as well as on your Macintosh.
So that's one of my other problems. They don't talk to each other.
Well, they all have to be on that same account, and then they can.
They are, but they just look at me and they say, not today.
Not today. Are they all on the same Wi-Fi? They have to all be on the same Wi-Fi. I'm sure they are.
They're all in the same room.
They're in the same room, and they don't talk to each other. Well, how dare they?
I don't know.
How dare they? All right, I'm going to take a little break, but you hang on. I'll talk to you some more off the air because...
Thank you.
But that's the fundamental thing, is you have an Apple ID. That's what goes to your iCloud stuff, but that's separate from everybody else. And that's what's confusing, I'm sure. So, thank you for hanging on.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. So, what's going on then that's confusing? First of all, they don't talk to each other. What do you mean talk to each other? Like, you can't AirDrop to each other, or what is it that you can't do?
No, I can't do that. I'm not sure I follow that, but my calendar doesn't talk to each other.
Okay. So, that's going to be in the control panel or the settings. On the Mac, they call it system preferences. They call it settings on iPad and iPhone. And in the settings, there's an accounts settings. And the account, you want to make sure that when you go to your accounts, you'll see an iCloud account.
Yeah.
You see that? Are you looking at your phone now, or where are you looking at?
No, I'm just remembering.
All right. So on the, I'm looking at, for instance, I'm looking at my iPhone here, and I'm going to look at the, I'm in the settings of the iPhone. Up at the top on the iPhone, it's a little different on the iPad than it is on the Mac, but up at the top, there's a picture of you and your name, and that will show your accounts, and it'll show an iCloud account. And if you tap that, you'll have all the things, all the Apple apps that are using iCloud, and you can turn on mail, contacts, calendars, reminders, notes, messages. Well, let me turn that on. Safari, news, stocks. These are all Apple apps, by the way. They're not third party. Health, wallet, Game Center, Siri, Keychain, which is where your passwords are stored. Find My iPhone and iCloud Backup. I've turned those all on. And that means, for instance, you said your calendars aren't syncing. Well, now your calendars are going to sync with iCloud.
Oh, wow.
And now you go into the other devices and you do the same thing. On the Mac, it's a little different, but this is how you do it on iOS. At the very top of the settings, there's a picture. There should be a picture of you, but maybe it's of a rose or a football. I don't know. It depends on what you picked when you first set up and your name. You tap that, and you'll see all of your accounts. On the Macintosh, it's the same idea, but it's going to be a little different because it's going to be – and I'm going to pull this up on my computer so I can walk you through it. So I'm looking at it. It's going to be in the system preference panes. There's going to be I think it's called users and groups. I think that's where. Well, actually, maybe not. Maybe it's the accounts thing. Let me look at this. On the Macintosh. Oh, it's internet accounts. It's internet accounts. So you tap internet accounts, and you'll see your iCloud account, and you'll see in there it'll be your iCloud email.
Oh.
And then, you want to check the boxes of the things you're going to sync. Now, since you're syncing it on your phone, you've set that up on your phone, you sync it on your computer, all those calendars will look the same. Everything, any changes you make on one will go to the other.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. It uses iCloud as a way of sharing those.
Got it.
And as I said, it can do it with the iCloud Drive where you store data with photos, mail, contacts, calendars, reminders. Safari bookmarks can be stored there. Notes can be stored there. Siri. Oh, I have the keychain turned off. Let me turn that on. It's a good thing to check this once in a while.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't have everything turned on. I should, right?
So, I do love that keychain. That's good.
Yeah, it's nice. And it will generate and save good passwords for you. So you should let it create your passwords so they're totally random, and it'll save them there for you.
It's hard to copy those, and so you have to use keychain.
You have to use it. That's right. But that's okay.
It is.
Hard to copy means hard to hack.
Exactly, because it makes no sense.
Because it makes no sense. Exactly right.
Oh, great.
All right, so look in all of your settings and look in the settings and make sure all your iCloud accounts are logged into the same email address, Corinne@iCloud.com, whatever it is, and then say share all those things, and that should work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Corinne sent me an SOS. Her iCloud's all messed up. Once you set up your iCloud account, I completely understand how confusing this is. I get confused all the time. And part of it is because Apple's confused. I'm going to be honest here. It's not your fault. In fact, really, if there's a motto to this show, the motto should be, it's not your fault. And there are a couple of things that happened. First of all, in the early days when it's all being designed fresh, the problem is it's being designed by an engineer. And engineers are not like you and me. They think differently. And they design it so it makes sense to them. But unless a company goes out and does a lot of testing with normal people, not engineers, they're going to find that they've created something normal people get confused by. So in the earliest days when we were starting with a blank sheet of paper, engineers designed it all. And they, unfortunately, in those early days, there was not a lot of user testing because there weren't a lot of users. And frankly, most of the users at that time were engineers or geeks like me. It made sense to us. So we all agreed. Well, this is how we're going to do it. Then over time, real people started using it and got completely confused. So they tried to fix it. And there's where your troubles began. Because every time they tried to fix it, it's like putting masking tape on top of a problem and writing a new problem on top of that and on top of that, and there's layers and layers. And they very rarely will any company, Apple, Microsoft, Google, throw out and everything they've done and start with a blank sheet of paper. Very rarely. If they were to do that, I think we'd have a better thing. But they don't do that because that's a lot of work and would leave a lot of people out in the cold. And there's a lot of reasons, economically, mostly economic reasons for not doing that. So they don't. They tape solutions on top of, they patch. Patching is a good word for it. They patch flaws. And by the time they get to the end, nobody understands it, even them. iTunes is a really good example. If you've ever tried to figure out what the heck's going on in iTunes and you look at it, it's crazy, and that's because they keep changing it and modifying it to make it easier. That's not easier. It's a mess. So, Corinne, it isn't your fault. Don't blame yourself. It is kooky. And it's just become that way over time. It's grown like Topsy over time. Just to be crazier and crazier. It's just a briar patch. It's like a brackly, brambly blackberry bush. You get in and you can't get out. And, you know, it's funny because in the early days, Apple first attempted this with something they call Mobile Me. And it was such a nightmare. This is back in the blank sheet of paper days. It was such a nightmare. Steve Jobs, he was still around at the time, called all the engineers into the Apple auditorium and said, "You're all fired. You're ruining my company." Literally, this is a famous episode. It was such a mess. He said, "You've destroyed Apple. Get out of here. Go. You are banished." They started over, and that's when they came out with Mac.com. I don't think everybody got fired there. Maybe they ought to, because then they got iCloud.com. But the thing is, they didn't get rid of the stuff from MobileMe and Mac.com. They still have it. In fact, I've been doing this long enough that I have my email address is the same at me.com, Mac.com, and iCloud.com. It's the same because I have all three. Because Apple, when they moved to the next one, said, "Well, you know that me.com? Now it's Mac.com. You know that Mac.com? Now it's iCloud.com." But then throw away the old one. So I got all three, and it's crazy. So what I suggested Corinne do is go into the settings on all of her Apple devices, and every one of them, Macintosh, they don't call it settings because that would be too easy. They call it system preferences. So you go into your system preferences on your Mac, your settings on your iPhone or your iPad, and you go to your iCloud account. On iOS, there's a picture of you at the very top on the modern versions of iOS, iOS 12. And you tap that picture, and you'll see your iCloud account there. On the system preference panes, there's a system preference called Internet Accounts. It's in there. You go into your iCloud account, and there'll be a box of all of the iCloud services, which includes mail, calendars, notes, Find My Mac, passwords. It goes on and on and on. The keychain is what's holding the password. All this. Those are all the iCloud services you can synchronize with. Turn on all the ones you want to use. I turn them all on except for mail because, as I said, I don't use iCloud for mail. But I turn everything else on, and I do that on all your devices. Now, as long as you're all under the same Apple ID, Corinne@iCloud.com, your calendars will sync, your mail will sync, everything will be the same on all your devices. This is the advantage that Apple offers. Is that if you just buy everything from Apple, it should all work together, right? Well, it should, if you kind of mess around with it a little bit, yeah. So that's the advantage. They really ought to make it easier. Edmonton says it was Mac.com, then it was MobileMe, then it was iCloud. All right. The order is not important. Apple's never been very good at this stuff. I think actually by now, iCloud went through a number of years where it didn't work very well. There was a system that they had built into iCloud, iCloud Document Sync. They wanted every application to use it. Apple's own applications, Pages and, the word processor Pages and their spreadsheet numbers use it, the iCloud Document Sync. But it was such a mess that when the third-party people started using it, they'd lose data. Stuff wouldn't work. It was confusing. It was terrible. So most third-party apps just said, I'm not using this. They started using Dropbox and other solutions. And so it's Apple's fixed all that since, but for that historic reason, you'll find most apps don't use it. Only Apple does. And so that was part of Corinne's confusion, was there are some apps that say, well, log into your iCloud account to use this app. Okay, but that's not the same. She changed the password at that point. That's not the same as the password for the app. That's a different. Oh, what a mess. Oh, what a tangled web we weave over years and years. It would be best, wouldn't it, just to crumple it all up and start with a fresh sheet of paper. But nobody's doing that. And it's not, by the way, Apple alone. I mean, look at Google. Look at the nutty situation Google has with all its accounts and Google Drive and Gmail. It's just as crazy. Just as nutty. Amazon's not any better. It's all just nutty and crazy because it's all grown up over time. So, my philosophy always was you shouldn't have to learn how to do it. The computer should adapt itself to you. I've realized that was a fool's errand. That was never going to happen. You know, in theory, if you were doing this right, the computer would be smart enough to just see how you do it and do it that way. But no, maybe someday, our children's children, it'll be that way when artificial intelligence allows programs to adapt themselves to you. But for right now, we got to adapt ourselves to the computer. I'm sorry. It shouldn't be that way. It's not morally right. It's not ethically right. It's just the way that it is. So you got to learn how and figure it out. And I don't want anybody to get the impression that I don't tear my hair out every single day trying to figure this stuff out. It's completely normal. There is nobody, I don't care anywhere you go, even inside of Apple, who's got it figured out. They're just as confused inside of Apple, I promise you. 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, guess who's next? The Gizwiz, Dick D. Bartolo, with his gadget of the week. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dance. He's the Denny Terrio of the gadget set. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, a disco demon, and our gizmo wizard, or Gizwiz, as we call him for short. He joins us every week to dance. You've switched, though, from satin shirts open to the navel to nice dark flannel plaids.
When the city hit 17 on Thanksgiving, and polyester was... you could use an ice scraper on polyester. I thought, you know, I'm going to go to some wool things.
Yeah, so you guys, you got a big cold snap.
Oh, my gosh. It was the weird. It was, I think they said it was 18 when they were getting ready for the parade to start.
This is scaring Lisa because we're going to be in New York.
Oh, no.
In a
you know what?
Weeks.
Tomorrow, Dennis and I are planning on going boating tomorrow.
it's no, time I'm for serious. A picnic.
They're talking about 55 tomorrow.
What? The weather is so crazy.
It's bizarre. It's just bizarre.
So crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Dick has been doing his research, and he has come up, I'm sure, with another fun gadget.
Yeah, you know what? There was a pet show, and I found this new gadget. If a seniors with dogs or people who want to paper train a puppy, seniors, especially in the dead of winter when they can't get out.
How about if you want to paper train a senior? You got anything for that? No,
you know, you might be able to use it for that. They wouldn't. They wouldn't let me at the place. I said, "Can I try it?" And they said, "No. We'll demonstrate it for you, but we're going to use water and clay." Clay.
And what is this?
So, Leah, this is called. I'm just looking for it here. It's
brilliant
called Brilliant
Pad.
Brilliant Pad.
I'm looking
and
on
I
your
said,
website. Yeah.
I know. I said, iPad for dogs? And
no.
He said, no. It is a way for dogs to use a wee-wee pad and do whatever they want. And then you set how many hours you want for the pad to change itself.
Oh, my doctor has this in his office. It's, after an hour, you've been sitting on the bench waiting for the doctor.
Exactly.
It just rotates through for a fresh... fresh piece
exactly.
of paper. Yeah.
So this rolls up and seals everything. Even the ends of the roll are sealed, so there's no odor.
Ah.
And I said, well, what do you do if the dog jumps up there when it's time for the paper to change?
It rolls.
He said, no, there's a little, see this little laser here, and he demonstrated it. If the roller starts and the pet jumps on, it automatically stops and waits for him to get off. So this is good for doggies up to about 25 pounds. And then the roll is equal to 27 wee-wee pads. And you can just close that.
What do they call them in Scotland? Wee-wee pads.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Exactly.
Okay.
And then because the ends are sealed, when I think it's about a month, you take the entire roll out and drop it in the trash. The plastic part is biodegradable. Most of the pad is biodegradable. It uses less padding than wee-wee pads. And then you put in a whole new roll, and that way you don't have to touch anything, any of the number one and number two for an easy way to describe it.
I think this is too adult for this program.
Oh, I do.
Brilliant pad.
Pad. And the amazing thing, Leo, is yesterday it was maybe they're cashing in on Black Friday, but this morning on Amazon, I thought, let me just double check it. It's still $149. It's $99.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it's really cold and you don't want to take your puppy out, the thing is the puppies don't go out anyway. I mean, you know, you can, they're just going to go when they go.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But you normally, if they've been in an enclosed area and there's paper there, they will pick the paper as opposed to where
that.
They
eat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So,
Dick, how many dogs have you raised from puppies?
Oh, my gosh. You know, probably about 14 or 15 in 40 years.
Wow.
And I've had great luck. You know, most of my dogs live to be 15 or 16. And Fairway, my last dog, went to 16 and a half.
Fairway was a sweetie.
Oh, my gosh, it was great.
And
then I had this dog, Charlie, who's a sweetheart, too.
Now, who do you have now?
Charlie. A rescue nice. Dog who made his debut on ABC News. I had this carry pack, and the producer said, can you bring in a dog?
Oh, maybe.
So I put Charlie in it.
Me, Dick.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to go.
He just sat there the whole time. It was great.
Oh,
it was
Charlie.
Super.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. Well, you know, Lisa's, of course, we lost Ozzy a couple of years ago. And Lisa,
yes, I know. Ozzy was a sweetheart.
Every time she sees a dog, she says, we need to get another dog. So I think it's just a matter of time before we, too, will be buying wee-wee pads from brilliantpad.com. If you want to know more, here's what you do. Go to gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. And click the button that says the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy. And all of his picks for this week and previous weeks are there. Easy to see, and all the links and videos and everything. You can also, while you're on his website, gizwiz.biz, play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. And don't forget, Dick has a weekly podcast with Chad Johnson called The Gizwiz at gizwiz.tv.
I think you named that. That was good. I said, Leo, what can I call this?
Well, I was getting creative. I thought, well, they call you The Gizwiz, so let's call it The Gizwiz Show.
Yeah, well, you edit the and show. Otherwise, I would have been dead. I would have been dead.
Mad's maddest writer. Are you in this month's Mad?
I am in this month's Mad. I have actually the Mad that's going off sale now. I had ways to be safe on Halloween, and in the next issue, I have Blamium, a new drug. You take the drug, we take the blame. So people. It's for people who want to loosen their tongue and not get blamed.
But I'm on Blamium. It's not my fault.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not my fault. I'm on Blamium right now.
I'll send you some.
Yeah, I think I need it. Give me an excuse for the things I'm going to say anyway. Dickie D, thank you.
Okay, buddy.
I didn't ask you about your Thanksgiving. Did you do the pineapple upside down cake?
No, that's Christmas. So we just did a pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie.
And all turkey. Right. All the stuff.
Okay. Thank you, Dickie D. Have a
okay,
great,
take care.
Have a
see
great
week.
We'll see you next week. Can we get one more call in before the show's over? I think we're going to try. Doug's on the line. He's been hanging on from Beaumont, California. Hello, Doug.
Hey, hello. How's it going?
Thanks for your patience. What can I do for you?
Yeah, well, things are... I always enjoy listening to your show. And
when you're on hold, you get all the behind-the-scenes chatter.
Yes, we do. Yeah, yeah. We get all the gravy. Not just the turkey.
All the Bob Ross stuff.
What a great guy.
Yeah, you kind of sound like him. You ever paint?
You know, no, I've done a little bit of painting, not too much.
Actually. You need a new Bob Ross. Maybe you should talk
to PBS. My barber is very much like him.
So
he's the Bob Ross of the tonsorial industry.
Yes, and with those snipping shears, you probably fall right asleep.
Oh, I do. I do. I get very comfortable. Yeah. And then my hair looks like a pretty puffy cloud.
A puffy little cloud. Wait, I've only got a little time left, about a half a minute. Quickly, what can I do for you?
Yeah, so maybe you could address this at some point, but I'm using I have this flight path tool. It's from Aviation Weather Service, AWS.
Yep.
And you go on there, and there's the flight path tool.
But it uses Java.
It uses Java.
I can help you. I know exactly what's wrong. Modern versions of Java disable the browser plugin because it's relatively insecure. But you can go back in and fix that. It's just a setting, and then it will launch whenever you launch your browser. I'll tell you what. We're going to break. I'll walk you through it. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Doug, first of all, check your Java, make sure you've got it installed.
It is installed. Okay. It's 1.8, I think it is.
Yeah, that's the most recent version. Yeah. But what they don't do, they turned off the browser plugin because that was considered unsafe.
Okay.
And that was the thing that launched automatically when you launched the when you went to the flight path page.
Right, right.
So let me just check. It's probably a setting in your browser, but it might be a setting in your Java. Do you get a pop-up that says Java has been disabled?
What I get is a thing that says that security or something.
It's an issue for Java applets have been an issue in the past. So if you turn this
really
on, you want to be
window.
Yeah, just
it's
only go to that site. Window. Don't launch Java anywhere else. So which browser are you using?
Whichever one. I have Firefox, which is my main, and then I tried Chrome, and then I tried the Edge because I'm on a Windows 10.
So the only one that will work. So Firefox and Chrome have disabled it.
Yeah, so for your security settings,
yep.
I have blocked blah, blah, blah.
Yep. And they don't use – Firefox particularly doesn't allow these NPAPI plugins anymore. So you can't use Java and Firefox 52 or higher or Chrome 42 or higher. but you want to use the most recent version of the browser. It's just not safe. By the way, the same thing for Safari. So it's getting harder and harder to run Java. At this point, I think the only browser, and I'm looking at the Oracle Java page. In fact, you could Google, how do I enable Java in my web browser for the details? It looks like you have to use Internet Explorer.
Okay, not Edge?
No, not even Edge.
Yeah. Okay.
So you do have IE on Windows 10. That's the good news. They didn't disable it. Maybe for this reason. Yeah, it's not. There's no menu item, but if you hit Windows key and type Internet Explorer, it'll launch.
Okay.
And then in Internet Options, under the Security tab, you'll have to set a custom security level and turn on scripting of Java apps. and enable that.
Okay, so where are we at on that?
That's, well, I think I let me look on if they still make internet
tools. Safety tool. Would it be in safety?
Let me just open my internet options and I'll tell you. So internet options. It's in the control panel. It's the security tab.
It's in the control panel.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You may not remember this, but I do. IE's settings, for some reason, were in the control panel under internet properties. So, and if you go there, there's a security tab. And then you'll see security levels. And you want to set the internet zone security level to custom.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. It's cuckoo.
Yeah. Network and sharing. Where are we at?
Internet properties. You know what? Hit Windows key. It's not in the reg. Okay, here's another thing.
Oh.
It's not in the modern Windows control panel. It's in the old school control panel. So hit Windows key, type internet options or internet properties. Is.
Yep, there it is.
Yep, and you'll see the old school. Remember how control panels used to look? And then there's a security tab at the top.
Yep.
And then in that security tab, click custom level underneath the security levels for this zone. Make sure you're in the internet zone. And then you can scroll down, and let me just do this. I think it'll say Java.
Yeah, there is an ActiveX.
ActiveX, remember that? There's one you don't want to turn on. But if you keep going, you'll see Java. And you want to enable Java applets.
All right. Where are we at here? ActiveX. We're still down there.
Oh, it's way down there. I'm not seeing it yet either.
Really down?
Yeah. And there's no search, of course.
Yeah. Oh,
crazy. Is it under, let's see, it's scripting of Java applets. Oh, I wonder if they took it out here, too. There it is. So it's almost at the very bottom. In fact, it'd be fastest. Just go to the bottom.
Oh, there it is. Yep. Yeah. Enable scripting.
Yep. Is it enabled?
Yep. It is enabled. So I just need to use Internet Explorer.
I think that's the solution in this custom level. If you recently installed Java, Oracle says, you may need to restart your browser in order for browser to recognize the installation. In addition, make sure Java content in the browser is enabled in the Java control panel. Oh, Lord above. So if it doesn't work, because really this is an insecure thing. In fact, it probably at some point will stop working entirely. But you know what? I can almost promise you that website is not going to ever be updated because it's a government website. And you know, Java's always going to be fine for them.
Well, it says it's enabled.
All right. So if it doesn't work, then you have to go in the Java control panel.
Nope. It's I just went to the Java and it's enabled.
Oh, good. All right. Now try it. I'm just curious. Go to if you would, while I'm on the line, I'd love to hear if this worked.
All right. Let's see if I can
Are you a pilot?
Yes, I am actually.
This is an important tool for you.
It's a good tool, you know, but it has started. What is that? Oh, come on! What is that? Oh, does that say yes? Oh, okay. Well, I clicked okay, but nothing's happening.
Uh-oh.
There's a little tiny window. Well, you know what? Nothing happened. I'm just going to have to go to the flight path tool here.
I think it might be that it's no longer, you know, Java has been, like Flash, Java's kind of deprecated now.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. I didn't realize this, that there's no way to turn it on in Chrome and Firefox anymore. You used to be able to, but there's no way to do that anymore.
Security, applications must meet requirements for high or very high security settings. Or be a part of the exception.
So maybe there's more that you have to do now.
Yeah.
Are you getting a little farther with IE than you did with the others?
Not really. The security settings have blocked the application.
So what is the website? I want to see this on my machine.
Okay, so if we go to aviationweather.gov. It's just simple just to Google the flight path tool
Okay.
for AWS flight path tool.
Okay.
And you'll come right up to it. And by the way, there are a lot of good, just from AWS, it's there are a lot of good just meteorological things that you can do to get a variety of weather products and models.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you got it. It runs in Java. They're probably not going to rewrite it, are they?
I know, yet they're the government, you know. They probably don't even know what's wrong.
They don't know it. They don't even know what's wrong. That's
but, you know, it's a really funny thing because they have another tool called the HEMS tool, which is the Helicopter Emergency Services tool, which basically only goes up to 5,000 feet. And that tool is pretty much the same tool, in, as far as I could tell, in that it works the same way.
And that
works fine. And I think that uses Java as well. I don't see how it wouldn't. So,
well, it could be that they are rewriting them and they've rewritten.
Can I get an older version of Java? Can I just?
It's not the version of Java. It's the browser. What you could do is, and I would be careful with this, but if you you can find a Firefox version older than we have this problem with a check reader from Chase Bank. It will only work with the older versions of Firefox.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to keep the same problem. It's an NPAPI plugin, and Firefox will no longer support that. So we have to keep a Firefox version and not let it update. Because browsers these days automatically update.
Yeah,
so you can get a version of Firefox older than 52. You need Firefox 51. And then what I would do is I would get there's a way to do apps that will run off of the USB key. They call them portable apps.
Uh-huh.
So get the portable app version of Firefox 51. Put it on a USB key and don't leave it in the machine because you don't want it to update.
Right.
And then
yeah.
It'll run in that browser, but don't use it for anything else because it's hideously insecure.
Yeah.
But that app would be all right, I'm sure.
Oh, it's an incredible thing because it's live, it's malleable, it's moldable.
What do you fly?
Instantaneous. I fly Caravans for FedEx.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So FedEx doesn't have its own tool?
No, they don't.
Boy, they ought to. You're going to call Fred and say, dude, how you expect me? I'm surprised that they use Caravans. How come they use such a small plane? What is?
Well, for regional and short haul situations. So in our case, I fly out of Ontario in California, and
love Ontario and Airport.
Isn't that great? I don't know why anybody goes to LAX.
I know.
No
so
idea.
Yep.
You have to be crazy to go there.
I know.
Anyway, they we'll fly to San Luis Obispo or down to pretty much Central Coast into Bakersfield in the Central Valley and up.
So they take all the seats out and it's just a cargo plane.
It's cargo version, yeah.
Neat.
Yeah. And
it's probably really economical, actually.
Yeah, it's a lot more economical. Plus, you know, the smaller airports can't handle larger airplanes.
Right.
And in fact, Cessna's designing a new airplane, which is due to roll out next year. They're calling it the 408, and they're running the new PT-114, PT-6. Upgraded versions that are running on the new Caravans now, which are 900 and 1,000 horsepower each.
Wow. It's a single prop, though, right? Single engine, right?
It's a single turbine. Yeah. It's a single turbo prop.
Cool.
And
cool.
And the 408 is going to be a twin, and it'll provide a lot more lift.
Nice.
And be able to go into some of these airports that we're now running 3 or 4 planes to. So and that'll even cut the cost a little bit more. And so Nice. Yeah, it's a. I just, you know, it's just a nice, easy tool to use. It's just right there. You don't have to go to several different websites. I can find out freezing levels, icing. I can find out, you know, severe weather. I can see the radar. I can see the satellite. I can see the airport information of whatever airports I need. I can get a whole picture of the entire region.
I wonder if there's like an iPad app or something that will do.
There
the
is
thing.
Actually. It's ForeFlight. Which and our company has just gone.
I know a lot of because it's so much lighter than all the big paper manifests.
Well, you know, yeah, this is my first. You know, you're talking about iPads, and I have one for my drone business, and I use specifically just for that. And I had an iPad that came with it because I bought the drone used.
Right.
And I can't really. I mean, I can use it. But it has the guy's information on it.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it still has his old ID.
Oh.
Oh. I don't even want to use it.
No, I wouldn't.
You know.
In fact, geez, didn't he know better? Holy cow.
I don't know. Anyway, he told me, he gave me a password at one time. He says, I'm changing all my passwords. But here's the password.
He needs to, what he needs to do is take it off of Find My iPad. It's complicated because Apple doesn't want people to steal these. So he has to release it. And if he releases it, then you can wipe it and start over. If you're still in touch with the guy, ask him to release it.
Yeah, I can't just wipe it and start over. I don't think so.
Well, you could if he would release it. So I'm looking FTP.mozilla.org has old versions of Firefox. So you can download Firefox 51 there.
Then
put it on a USB key. If you want to know more about portable apps, if you Google portable apps, they'll show you how you can set up a USB key. They actually have an app called Portable Apps that will then have Firefox on it. This is very common use for Firefox.
Right, right.
And then that way it won't get updated. And you just plug it in when you need it and unplug it. And you can put Java on the portable key as well, which is probably a better way to do it.
Yeah, that way they know where to look and they can talk to each other. Yeah. Well, I'm 69, so you know, these computer things. I'm a Windows guy and I've never because of the whole iPad thing, and in fact, the iPad I have now that is my own personal one for the drone, it's it keeps asking me, "Oh, set up this, set up that, and set up your account, and set up this." And I'm
you're like Corinne. You're not can't be bothered.
I'm not doing any of that. iCloud. I'm not doing your.
Oh yeah, nowadays you don't own anything anymore. It's all on their servers.
And God knows what you know, Jobs in his Nirvana land is doing with my information. So.
Well, let's hope Steve's not doing anything with it. I got to run. It's nice to talk to you. I'm going to move on to the next show, but I really appreciate it. I'll look for you in the skies over Ontario.
Absolutely. Keep painting the happy clouds.
I will. Puffy little clouds. Nice to talk to you, Doug. Have a good one.
You bet.
See you. Bye-bye.